Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Optimizing Your Digital Pathology Investment, a discussion with the experts. The presenters are Claudine Alexis, Senior Clinical Administrative Director, Northwell Health Laboratories, Greenvale, New York, Eric Glassy, MD, Medical Director, Affiliated Pathologists Medical Group, Rancho Dominguez, California, Bob McGonigal, Publisher, CAP Today, College of American Pathologists, Northfield, Illinois, and Sony Wirio, MD, Regional Chief Pathology, Southern California Kaiser Permanente, Harbor City, California.
So welcome everybody. My name is Eric Glassy, and I'm here with invitation of Leica to talk about digital pathology and how it's evolved. We have some good news to share, which we'll mention in a minute. I'm joined with three expert panelists, veterans to these wars, particularly the gentleman on stage right, who will chat a bit more. We're going to discuss some of the latest trends and some insights that these folks have because they've actually two of the three have deployed digital pathology in their practices. And, one of them has been an evaluator of the market and shifts and changes as that market has evolved. So let's start off with that. So Dr. McGonigal.
Yes.
CAP Today.
Yes.
Yeah, editor and archives of pathology, and he regularly interacts with industry leaders and pathology leaders. He's a longtime supporter of the college here, War College here. He's been going for many, many years, so he's certainly a fixture. He's joined with Claudine Alexis, who's Senior Clinical Administrator Director at Northwell Health, and she's responsible for handling administration of pathology department for the whole health system, so I'm sure that keeps you busy.
The whole health system.
Yeah. Okay. Don't be modest. And then in between is Sonny Wirio. He's chief of anatomic pathology at Kaiser Permanente in Southern California, and he knows firsthand the benefits of digital pathology. I was here in the early days when Kaiser was deploying Digital Path, and it was a quite remarkable journey. Very slow progress, but now it's going great. So, Bob?
Yes.
As editor of CAP Today, you've seen digital move from the shadows in sort of research-only applications until now it's out in the sunlight with digital primary diagnosis. You've seen now four FDA-cleared systems, and we're here to celebrate the fact that Leica's system, GT450, was just a couple days ago approved by the FDA, so that's great. It's a great scanner, and if any of you are in the market for looking for scanners, you should take a peek at that one. So, Bob, first question. Trends and technological advancements that are driving digital diagnostics and improve patient outcome. Can you chat about the landscape here and set things up for the rest of the
Yes, let me do that. First, I want to thank Leica for organizing this event. I was making the point that that what is today the DPA, of which Eric has been the president, originally started as the Aperio Conference, which was held in San Diego, and then Leica made this acquisition. And about 20 years ago, I was, I think, the second or third keynoter at the Aperio conference. And then a couple of years ago, Sylvia Ace asked me to keynote the DPA conference and look at 20 years. So it's been a journey. It's been a slog. But 20 years, as we put it in perspective in this field, is really about the time it would take for adoptions. And we've had one great forerunner, which was the PAP test screening that was automated that changed a lot of things. There's lessons there to be learned. The current landscape in the United States, you all know this, there's a shortage of pathologists. This shortage is relatively recent, certainly relatively recent in comparison to Europe and Scandinavia, where it's much, much more advanced in digital pathology. And it's been the shortage of pathologists that's helped us enormously here in advancing digital pathology. The second big trend, and again, everyone in this room knows it, pathology is moving to subspecialization. And subspecialization is not a non-trivial endeavor for laboratory pathology operations. You don't just have one subspecialist in the system. You need depth, and that's what we're seeing. Where digital pathology is enabling systems and enabling consultation with subspecialists everywhere, as Ken Bloom often says, it's the democratizing of knowledge and the net, you get it, optimizing the network effect of specialty. So right now the future's bright. It's no question that the money is hard to come by. Capital is not easily found in laboratories, big or small. But the good news is virtually every place has started on this. They've made the first step on their 1,000-mile journey. I don't know of a pathology operation anywhere that doesn't have a scanner. It may be in a closet. They may be pulling it out of the closet and plugging it in and looking to really get started. I know of operations that are digitizing every slide that they make, and they're not reading a single case out in primary diagnosis, but they're getting ready for that. And so with all that, the future looks pretty bright. But the shortage of pathologists is actually key. The financial modeling of digital pathology is still a challenge. At Ohio State, it's no secret. Dr. Frankel was given tons of money from the Cancer Center at Ohio State, and they said, how would you like to use this? Please digitize pathology for us, which she, of course, if you know Dr. Frankel, you know that she does what she wants to do, and she's very good at following orders. She poached Anil Parwani from UPMC, and the rest is history. And so far, that's where we're at in the environment. So the future's bright, but everybody really needs to stay close to the field. It's got plenty of ups and downs.
So, Bob, you mentioned the U.S. versus other parts of the world. Can you just elaborate a little bit about the global adoption of DigiPath? Is it driven only by a shortage of pathologists in other countries? Are they more advanced? What is it, FDA regulations holding things up? What's your...
Well, the FDA regulations, as you know, it was a bloody battle, and that held us back for a good long time. But in Scandinavia, it was largely a question of the shortage of pathologists. It was largely a question in many parts of the world, what is the appeal of surgical pathology? It was just not as prestigious, wasn't as well paid, wasn't as well regarded as it is in the United States. So you see in Scandinavia, fully digitized labs, and that's where we're seeing. So we look at the global picture, and then now from the United States, other players, global players, are looking at the United States and saying, if they're doing it now, we need to get on the train. So Japan was one of the very last holdouts. As you know, surgical pathologists are not very well esteemed in the Japanese system. Many people don't even consider them physicians. And now there's a very big movement in the Japanese Society of Pathology to revisit the value of surgical pathology, and they like the technology of digital path as being part of the answer to their dilemmas there, too.
Very good. Let's switch to Alexis, if we may. So can you tell us, so Northwell is one of the largest healthcare systems in the U.S., and you're overseeing a good portion of that, however modest you want to be. So tell us about some of the challenges that you had in implementing it or getting it adopted at Northwell. You know, and how important it is to have a champion move that forward.
I think it's very important to have a champion. We started talking about digital pathology.
You started talking.
Well, actually, thank you, Dr. Crawford. I started talking about digital pathology in probably 2010. I went to a very small meeting. I came almost rushing back like a two-year-old, you know. This digital pathology thing, Dr. Crawford, we have to do this. Well, fast forward a few more years, and in 2016, 17, Dr. Crawford was, we're ready for this. And I think adoption No. I mean, I had pathologists saying, are we going to lose our jobs? You know, because they didn't quite understand, you know, what it was all about and what it was actually going to do. I'm one of those people that think that it would have come to fruition. They didn't believe me at the time. But there were some pathologists in the group that were very curious. You know, they were our champions. They could see the opportunities of where digital pathology was going to go back then. And it was important for them to try to, you know, talk about it with their other groups or their subspecialties. I remember having one conversation with one of the pathologists who said, if we just start to talk about it and sort of, you know, see what the advantages could be in future years, maybe they will adopt to it. I think a lot of them have taken to it. We're not quite there as, you know, complete rollout. But I think over time we will get where we need to be.
Did you start with a particular, you know, subspecialty that might be more willing to adopt?
Well, it's been a few years for us. It's been the journey started in 2017. Mm-hmm. And clearly it wasn't just, you know, buying a scanner and put it in a room, as you call it, and, you know, plug it in and we're ready to go. What we realized was that IT was a very, very big piece of this.
Yeah.
And, of course, COVID hit. And then we needed money. So, you know, there were certain things we needed to do before we even got to that very, very small area. We started with breast biopsies because we, in our health system, we do have different workflows throughout our hospitals. Mm-hmm. So we try to, you know, bring that particular workflow together, which has been successful. But then again, it's just a handful of pathologists at the moment. We're not rolling out anything else. We're also doing PD-L1 with our lung pathologist. Our chair is also here, and he's part of that. So I think it's a slow process, but, you know, our IT is a hurdle, if you will, to a certain degree. How the results roll back in and, you know, when it rolls back in, how it's connected, et cetera. So there are hurdles outside of, you know, champion of pathologists, but I think at Northwell we will get there.
So the biggest hurdle is IT-related issues?
I do believe.
Any other hurdles? I mean, was cost a big issue for you?
Cost was a very big issue. We probably try to get money for at least a year and a half. Was it more than that, Dr. Crawford? 3 years, okay. Yes, and making the health system understand why we needed it,
right.
You know, and how much it was going to cost, and things we had to promise them that we would do to, you know, to sustain the effort of the cost. But it was a long conversation getting funding for digital. Yeah.
Let me just throw in a
comment. Please.
Just two quick comments. One is pathologists are superb creators of anxiety for themselves. I think it probably goes with the trade. You're anxious that you don't make a boo-boo in diagnosing an important case, but your pathologists are very good at it. I've been working for all these guys for like 40 years, so I have a certain privilege of saying what I think. So you have that. You also have a lot of pathologists who are very, very oriented towards information technology. Mm-hmm. Eric's a conspicuous example. There are many at Northwell and many elsewhere. And so until we've discovered the cloud, people were very good at saying, my God, we're going to bring in big iron by the, you know, the trainload full to hold all these images. It's not a trivial storage situation. And so that was one of the major hurdles we were hearing about for a long time, that one. I'll say one more thing, and that is pathologists are very individual creatures, and they don't like to adopt to a certain workflow, and they don't want people telling them how their workflow is going. I always like to point out that some very famous names, many of whom you know, are very divided on how they approach their cases in SearchPath. I know famous people who cannot sleep. They get to the lab about 4 in the morning. As soon as slides would come out of the processor, they would immediately grab them and sign out all their cases. We know many, many like that. I know others who go in late and schmooze and talk to the surgeons, and then they read some journals and take a couple calls. And then when things get quiet and everyone's gone, they pick up these incredible trays, and then they start to work about 6 o'clock. And in between that, there's all kinds of habits that pathologists have. And some of those, digital pathology threatens some of those habits, you see. And I think they didn't want to be bracketed a certain kind of workflow. Would you agree, Sonny?
Yeah, so true. So true. I'm dealing with that every day. Like we have, I believe in uniformity of workflow.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at Kaiser, we have like 120 pathologists, 14 medical centers. We dealing with outpatient, inpatient, meaning I have to deal with 120 personalities, and I have to say, you know, you cannot agree 0 to 10. I mean, you cannot agree everybody to be 5, but at least if you are between 2 standard deviation in terms of your workflow, we are successful.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that Dr. Wirio has jumped in there, because it's great for me to see another community pathologist involved, you know, in digital. It's been adopted widely for many of the reasons that Bob mentioned in academics. But community has been slower, mainly because of the IT issues and the expense associated with it. But what I've seen in my system, I have a large path group, 40 of us in the group, and we cover a couple of different health systems, one of which is Providence. And they're finally looking at digital because they can't staff their smaller hospitals in the Pacific Northwest. So that's driving right now their willingness to sit down with pathologists. We've been beating that drum a lot, and it's been sort of ignored until all of a sudden, oh gosh, I need to have coverage at that hospital frozen section. So maybe we should start talking digital. So that's been one of the drivers, at least where I am with the health system. And so good to have another community pathologist engaged here. And you started talking about your journey here. How did that start at Kaiser? Huge operation there. How did you get that going, Sony?
Well, it started actually, like Bob said, 82 in the closet, pretty much. So we bought an 82. At that time, was initially thinking to implement image analysis for breast. But at the same time, I told the manager, let's validate it for immunostain as well. Because the challenge that we have in Southern California is that the distance. We have 3 histolabs servicing 14 medical center, and expecting all the immunostain at that time to deliver on time is very hard. So I validated for the purpose of immunostain at that time. It's been going well. Occasionally we do start cases and things like that. So it's been, you know, working well. But again, right after COVID hit, and then the regulation and CMS lifted the allowing us to do primary, I said, let's just roll it out. I mean, you know, at that time, outpatient is shut off. I mean, we don't have a lot of outpatient, so cases are slowing down. But I know immediately at that time, anything slowed down, it will pick up at the end. So we roll it out during COVID, actually. And also thinking, you know, one of us may get sick, and then they may not be able to come back to the hospital because we are hospital-based. So, you know, we may be out. And actually, that has been a blessing because, you know, when we have to be quarantined, we actually allow those people to read from home. So they get a habit reading digital, and they start picking up things that actually better in digital. For example, margins better evaluated in digital. I'm a dermpath by training, so like measuring melanoma is definitely better than in digital. So there are so many things that we didn't realize the advantage. And the most important thing actually for me overseeing histolab for 14 medical centers is a delivery system, right? So, I mean, it's getting more and more difficult with the traffic in LA. Things that 20 minutes can take up to 2-3 hours. So that's how we started. And then we start buying more scanner. We actually scan the slides on demand. If pathologist wants to read remotely, we code it up front so that they can be available remotely. And instead of slides ready by 8 a.m., I incentivize them. They will be ready digitally at least few cases by 6 a.m. So to comment on Bob, personality of pathologist disorder, right? Mm-hmm. Some people want to read at 6 a.m. Slides are available at 6 a.m. Back then, they all have to pile it up until, you know, whenever courier comes, right, or whenever courier arrives. So, that's another thing. And then we did something that's really unusual. At that time, I said, you know, let's partner with our radiology folks because I feel like they have the know-how and IT infrastructure better than the pathology or histology. And the radiology actually mentioned one thing that I agree with me as well, that most people in the histo or pathology side are not agreeing, is that we have a policy, anything that we scan, we cannot keep it forever. We're not going to delete it because the storage system actually getting cheaper and cheaper. And radiology at that time, probably the only one that agreed with me for that philosophy, simply because they understand, because they've been probably 6-10 years more advanced than us, right? So they like to look at back in the history. And back then, they also delete a lot of stuff. But nowadays, you know, anything scanned, we are not deleting. So we started having a lot of archives starting from around 2019 until now, so what, 5 years? And it's very beneficial, actually. Within the 14 medical center, people, our patient transfer over, and then the capability of reviewing them actually is very paramount. And I probably should stop there, but I'm going to talk more about the precision medicine and NGS, where we start doing the sequencing. Without digital pathology, I don't think we can, because the sequencer in, or the Illumina platform is in one area, and we have to distribute the slides from 14 to medical center to one area, which is almost impossible without digital, because then we can shove, we have to like reroute it to courier and causing delay and things like that. And as you know, this precision medicine, they expect we us to sequence everything within 7 days pretty much, so the patient can be treated. What else? The other issue that Bob already mentioned is a shortage of pathologists. I noticed that a lot. I mean, I think Eric also mentioned, we have like probably, it is possible probably the training, but it's really hard to get a good pathologist that willing to read high volume in general nowadays. I mean, I think people like Eric or Al Louis probably doesn't exist anymore. I mean, people that really love like general pathology, just very hard to come by. So it doesn't mean that's the end of it. I mean, specialization is one thing, but again, you know, if we hire a liver pathologist, we cannot have like 100 or 50 cases of liver pathologists every day, right? I mean, so, but maybe in servicing 14 medical center, we can hire one liver pathologist. So that's another advantage. And yeah, I'll probably stop there. Too many stories to tell.
No. The stories are good.
That's good.
So I was there early on at Kaiser Story when they started their digital, when they dropped in 18-2 and started getting trying to make their breast markers more automated and such. But one of the key drivers that wasn't mentioned was Dr. Wirio was smart enough to know that you needed someone to help drive this, not just the pathology champion, but someone that was technology savvy. So he took someone in their group that became their imaging tech, imaging manager, and they wrote, I mean, this lady was incredible, Patricia. Policy and procedures, training, you know, had a nice checklist for every time a pathologist started on their digital journey, they had to go through this checklist to be trained properly to use the system. And that a lot of that stuff, that hard work that happens in the trenches is ignored, and that helps drive adoption. When you say pathologists, you know, we're sort of checklist focused, and so we've got our list of things we need to do, check the monitor, da-da-da, and go through that. So that is a good way to start. So if you go on this journey, be sure you have not just the pathology champion, but also someone within the lab that can help drive things. Wait, is that right, Dr. Wirio?
Yeah, that's so true. And every pathologist hate it because they have to do extra thing, right? So
yeah.
So Patty basically, Patty and I basically always talk, and then said, oh, everybody complain about asking doing this checklist. And guess what? Now all new hire have to go through that checklist. Because if you want to go to sign out digitally or remotely, then you have to go through
that
checklist.
And the CAP loves it when they come in and inspect and they see all these nice checklists set up. It's really very, very valuable. Let's turn a little bit over to Claudine here. So you mentioned some of the use cases, but what value, after you got people trained up and using it, what other value has come about for the patients or the health system itself when you've adopted Digital Path?
I think the word for us adopting Digital Path is not quite there yet. In New York, we have to do things like validations and calibrations and all of those things, SOP writing, et cetera. So the adoption for the Northwell Health System is not quite where we would like it to be, I would like to say, but because along the way we've had workflow issues and things we need to do it, at least our two tertiary facilities that actually have instruments and, you know, and how we're going to store images, not store images. So adoption for our pathologists is really through the, you know, the validation of our instruments where they get the opportunity to actually, you know, look at slides and then compare it to the digital image. So have we adopted it 100%? The answer would probably be no at this point. But I think that, you know, once we do get going, I think that the adoption will actually be relatively simple. For the small use cases, like you mentioned, I do think we've gotten buy-in, and pathologists are, those groups of pathologists are definitely doing their work via digital.
Very good. Do you have centralized histology and IHC staining? No,
we're actually 21 hospitals or so in our health system.
Wow.
Most of them actually have histology laboratories. For in our region, which is the central region, because we have other regions, of course, they still have their wet labs in each of those locations. The pathologists themselves are actually in an off-site locations. So it's how slides will travel and with couriers at certain times of the day in a batch mode. And this is the ideal situation for having digital, you know, so we don't have to have all of these slides moving around the health system all over the place.
Exactly.
So that being said, I think Northwell can be a little bit complicated when it comes to that. It's different locations. Do we have pathologists at those locations? One of the earlier rollouts was a Leica instrument. Actually, it was the LV1. When one of our pathologists came aboard, there was value to having the LV1s at different locations for live viewing, whether it be for frozen sections or for EBUS cases or whatever it might be. The adoption of those is not necessarily where we want that to be either, but I think it's important for us to know it's not just routine scanning of slides, but there is that instrument that we have at least 9 or 10 of them rolled out in our health system.
Very good.
Sorry. Eric, let me make a quick comment. We scan in demand, meaning we identify case that we will be scanned, right? Believe it or not, within 110 pathologists, I think everybody using digital at different capacity. For example, right. I probably read like 90% digitally. Some people are not comfortable, you know, they probably HIMPAD, and they probably read only like 10% digitally. That's expected. You will see that. But believe it or not, the 10% move up very quickly to 50%, 60% in 6 months or a year. So the growth is amazing. And then I actually look at it very similar to how you read emails. You know, in the past, you read email, some of them actually want to print the email, right? And then before responding. And now people are responding in the phone. I mean, it's not perfect. I mean, but yeah, it is the way to go. So,
sure.
I mean, you will see that adaptation, I think, very quickly.
In my particular situation, Bob, yes.
Just let me say two more things to throw out into the general conversation. We all know that in many, many cases now, sample size of tissue is an enormous issue. I mean, if we get into areas of the lung and many, many other places, the samples are tiny. Also, then, that we have to take that sample and do all kinds of ancillary studies on it, as we all know. And many people are now using digital pathology to record the sample as it was received on the slide before they cut it into bits and shreds and slice and dice it to get all their ancillary studies out. That's a very, very big quality. I'm sure as I'm sitting here that the college is being lobbied to revisit its 10 years of slides storage standard in the accreditation program, and perhaps that might need to become a digital archive of 10 years so that original slide is scanned is the source of truth. I think that is very important. Another thing that I'm always remarked upon in many of the roundtables that we do in the Compass Group and other places is the amount of hours that large systems are devoting to tumor boards. I mean, a friend of mine at Baylor said we're doing 40 tumor boards a month at the Baylor Scott & White system. And if you think about having to go find the slides, which, as you know, is worse than the learning digital pathology, to go find the slides in a place that's in somebody's drawer, you can begin to see how easy and convenient it would be to do your tumor board from your computer and share it with all the people in the room. Just the walking back and forth time is an enormous saving. So those are two very, very good early use cases, it seems to me. And I know lots of people are adopting just for those reasons.
Just for tumor board.
Yeah.
I'll jump on the tumor board thing. I was covering at a small hospital, and we had a tumor board, and we just had got our scanner, and I scanned up the slides. And radiology had a radiologist from Cedars come down at the smaller hospital in San Pedro to view tumor board they were covering for their radiology colleagues. And I did the whole presentation with whole site images. And the guy stood up at the end and says, that was the most amazing tumor board I've ever seen. It so totally validated what we had done there. So if your group is not using it for tumor board, you're missing something. Because it really, you know, for a physician to, when you have people that are using live and you're moving your slide around, you know how fast you can move it and people get dizzy. They're not used to seeing that fast uptake about what just whizzed by on the screen. But having it in a whole site image format is much more preferable to your colleagues. So think about that. Let's talk a bit more about value to patients. So can the panel talk a bit about, we talked about potential value for pathologists, you know, in terms of being able to subspecialize and look at cases remotely. How about the impact on patients? Claudine, do you have some comments? And then
I think if all the stars line up and your laboratory is functioning 24/7 and your slides are being digitized, I think the value to patients is enormous. It's enormous that they can have instant results, if you will, because you don't have to wait for, the pathologist doesn't have to wait for the slide to come to them. They can power up their computers and the images is readily available to them. And I think that the patients would appreciate results coming to them a lot faster than, you know, 48 hours, a week, or whatever it might be. So I think the value to patients using digital pathology is enormous.
Yeah, I can make a comment. This is something new that we do since we internalize our NGS, that a lot of patients actually nowadays, I even told the pathologist that once you diagnose, say, metastatic lung cancer, don't just stop there. You should ask yourself what's next. You know, what's next is you might want to sequence that tissue, right? So measuring it in digital is much easier. And for us, we start doing, if that material is not enough, what can we do? Reviewing the prior digitally, because remember, we have an archive for 5 years already almost. So it's very easy. So immediately, instead of just say, yes, metastatic breast cancer in the lung, for example, we immediately go back and see, oh, this is not good for sequencing. Don't even use it. Use the prior one. Mm-hmm. Use the breast, original breast tumor. And since sequencing takes a while, right, so that's at least, we buy time like at least 14 days. And we actually do a lot of reflexing. And then that has been a patient satisfier as well. I mean, there's no point of sequencing something that is not even enough, right? I mean, it just wastes people's time, wastes the lab's time, wastes everyone's time, and most importantly, wastes patients' time, right? I mean, they want to be treated immediately. So I think having the value of reviewing prior instant and then immediately putting in the report that, you know, don't use this for sequencing, use that other material. I think it's very valuable for us.
Very good advice. Bob, do you have any?
Well, I can say that, I mean, the next great frontier for pathology is probably going to be direct interaction with patients on a much grander scale than we've seen to date. And that is going to be enabled by the reporting systems like MyChart and others. It's already, you know, a kind of a quasi-legal responsibility you have to share those results with patients. And I think a picture is really worth a thousand words, even if you can't make head or tail out of it. If a patient can see their case, hear from someone who's an expert on what this is and what we have made of this because we know what it means, it's great, great value. And I think the systems that do this well, and many people have made initial efforts, not with any resounding success, but like a lot of things, it takes time. The systems and the pathologists that do this for patients will be winners in the long run. I have no doubt about that.
That's true.
That's true.
Certain specialty, for example, dermatologists, I think start requiring us to kind of share the image and things like that. I mean, we do, from time to time, are you sure this is BP, for example? You know, we review them and we share the image with dermatologists, and they actually, it's very dermatologist satisfier as well. I myself stationed at South Bay, but I cover Baldwin Park area. That's doable because of digital pathology.
Right.
Otherwise, it's impossible for me to travel back and forth, share the image with them, and things like that.
You know, I like that theme of patient involvement with their own case. I have to tell you, sitting over the scope, double-headed scope with a patient and saying, and them, their eyes say, this is my tumor, this is what, and that's very, very impactful. And our earlier group here with Al Louis started a lab, Pathology Inc., and we experimented with all sorts of different ways of delivering reports, and we even experimented with adding a QR code on the reports, and that QR code opened up the whole site image of the case. And so clinicians could sit there in the office with the patient and show them, they couldn't understand all the pathology, but they said that was very impactful and helped drive patient satisfaction in their office. So we did that for breast marker cases where you have your breast marker report with individual images, but the oncologist could click on one of those images and it would open up and show the ERP or HER2DO evaluation. So it's a little gimmicky, but it is such a nice touch that the oncologist and the patient having that interaction. And now, as Bob said, the entree is the patient coming into your office or making an appointment to sit and visit with you to discuss their case. And now having that experience, not through a double-headed scope, through a whole-site imaging system, is much preferable. They'd rather watch it on TV than having, you know, how do I focus with that? So that's a very important piece of that. The other comment I want to make is on the commute. So I live in L.A., and one of the drivers for us to adopt digital was the challenge in getting cases. I used to think it just had to be dropped on a courier at 7 in the morning and be okay, but we had clients that were 2 hours away, and in rush hour, that's now 4 hours away. We're doing centralized histology, and we have one hospital now that's in Apple Valley. It costs us $100,000 in courier fees a year, and that's a driver for getting primary diagnosis, your slide scanned earlier, so think about that. I used to think it was just FedEx expenses, but courier fees are going up quite a bit. Another thing to think about. So let's, a lot of today's discussion is going to be about AI, and you'll hear from other panelists talking about artificial intelligence. So we haven't touched on that today, so I'd like the panelists to discuss a little bit about AI and how that might be driving digital pathology. Let's start with Sony, and then Claudine, and then have Bob wrap up.
Sure. So for us at Kaiser Permanente, Southern California, we talk about this probably like 3-4 years, and we partner with Leica as well. I think a month ago we decided to move our platform for Viewer and to Sectra, simply because we want to build what we call a pixel EMR. Radiology moved to Sectra this month. We will move to Sectra at the end of the year probably. Eventually, dermatology images, GI will move to Sectra as well. No one here from Sectra, so I can talk freely. No, I'm just kidding. The idea is we want everything pixel basically in one platform, simply because I feel that's the way to go. And then the mining may not be necessary in pathology itself, but it can be also from outside pathology. As you know, radiology backlog is a huge problem. I mean, pathology have a backlog, but probably not as much as radiology. But knowing which cases needs to be more important and start versus not start, I think that's one thing. For pathology itself, for me, the QC portion, I think that's a huge portion because right now we spend so much time, labor time, to QC our slides. So I think that's probably one thing that I will implement when we have an AI. The diagnostic portion of AI, the process AI is already there. I partnered with Vuno from South Korea before, automatically give you the Gleason that is more accurate than probably anything else because they are very consistent. You can actually program it whether you want to be more sensitive or specific, the percentage of Gleason and things like that. I mean, that's pretty much doable. But I'm more interested in the things that we can use to leverage our labor and then things that we can actually streamline and make it more uniform. I think QC is one area. The other thing is the imaging, like a PD-L1, anything that gives more prognostication is probably something that we should use AI. The interesting thing for me is that I think traditionally pathologists has been, the job of pathologists has been making diagnosis. I think that moving forward, I see prognostication as a huge impact. And I think having AI and then collaborate with other modality, I think that's probably the way to go maybe 10, 15 years from now.
Very good. Claudine, do you have any, you looking at AI at all? Any of the platforms have you ticked up?
Yeah, for our, breast,
yes.
Obviously, you know, the diagnostic type of AI and lung. I do think that AI is definitely the wave of the future and how it can actually, the workload of the pathologists by using AI can be less because the AI can be trained and it will do what it needs to do to aid the pathologists in signing out the cases. As far as Northwell is concerned, we're not, again, I'm just going to say we're not quite there yet as we're trying to just bring up everything else in the digital space. But I do think AI has an extraordinary amount of value and will have in the future with the different, you know, subspecialties and what value it can bring to it. Other than that, at this moment in time, I don't have an awful lot to say about AI.
Good. Bob, you got your crystal ball here. What does that say?
Yeah, it's a crystal ball thing.
Well, I think we've known for 20 years that the real fruit of this effort to digitize slides and do digital pathology has to do with the fact that we take data that was analog and we've now made it digital. There's very few things that have ever gone back to analog once they were digitized, although long playing records have been making a comeback according to the kids I see around. That's the only example. And even when the CD came out, I had a friend who was a music critic for the New York Times who did a huge series about how the vinyl record was superior in sound to the
wow.
CD. And I've never forgotten that. That's the one example I can quote. In some ways, look, the father of digital pathology is René Descartes. He invented the analytical geometry. That's what allowed us to put a man on the moon. We couldn't have just do it with analog tools, okay? We were not circumnavigating the globe. We've got to get a guy in an arch and slow it down and find it the perfect landing place. That's digitization. And now that we have it, we're going to be in a world of hype. You're going to hear great. There's great speakers today, so don't miss them that are on the program here at the Bohr College. My particular interest right now in AI is I don't understand how any institution having the availability of an FDA-approved AI device to check prostate cancer or lung or this could afford not to have that in its armamentarium. And if I were selling, if I were one of the AI companies, my first call would be to the risk management office of the healthcare institution. Because as you all know, unfortunately, when pathologists get sued, there's a lot of evidence there, and attorneys are very good at this. And you can just imagine Doctor, you made this diagnosis, yes. Were you aware that there is an FDA-approved artificial intelligence aid that would help you feel more secure in your diagnosis? And, yes, I've heard of that. Do you implement that in your system and in your practice? Well, we haven't yet. We're still evaluating. That's not good for people in a liability trial. So I think AI is going to play a big role in there. I have no idea whatsoever where this is going to come out, come back in 20 years, and we'll know a whole lot more. But it's going to be a disruptor. There's no question in my mind. I'm not of that school that thinks AI will just ripple through and we'll all have a wonderful life and we'll, you know, never have an anxious moment because there's AI in the system. That's unrealistic.
I'll just add a little anecdote that the urologists have told me that patients are coming into their office saying, did you have AI look at my prostate biopsy? You know, which is I mean, everyone's playing around with ChatGPT and stuff, so they're thinking about that a bit, and so they're running their path reports, their clinical lab stuff through that technology. So now they're asking. So we haven't done this, but we've been thought maybe we should bring on a prostate AI, and then on the bottom saying, you know, have a little comment saying, this case was reviewed by XYZ artificial intelligence. And I know that urologists would be very happy to see that little one-liner at the bottom. So how much time do we have here, Lance? We good? Got a minute? We have 1 minute? We have 4 minutes. So we're time for four questions. So anyone in the audience, or one longer question. Is anyone in the audience? Yes, sir.
I have just a practical question. So your histotechs have to load these slides to get the images. How has the technology improved in terms of speed of loading images through the scanner? And how does that compare with comparing cases for a courier pickup and stuff like that? Just in terms of like workload, effort, and expense on the histotech side.
So on the histotech side, I believe that, you know, when the cases come off the stainer and the histotechs have to sort it and match it with paperwork and bag it, tag it, and get it to a pathologist, all of that is quite lengthy, especially if you're a high-throughput laboratory. So the sorting of cases is probably a lot different for, you know, putting them on a scanner. You've got the entire case, and you put them on the scanner, and you're off to the races. So I think that ultimately the workload for histotechs will be less, given the opportunity, of course, for pathologists to have those cases much quicker rather than waiting on the courier. Cost-effectiveness of that is obviously the initial cost outlay is expensive, but after a while, I believe the gap will be a lot smaller.
Yeah, I can add to that that mis-sort or mis-delivered slides actually a big issue for us as well. So having digital pathology eliminate that problem. And for me, we have a one-way interface, so it's everything it's coming from our system, Copath, to like Aperio currently, and we move to Sectras, but it's automatically sorted for us already. We don't need histotech. We can hire a clerk for that in California, so we're hiring more clerk to just load it up quicker. So definitely another advantage in terms of not having to manually sort the slides. Yeah.
The other is, think about it, it's a little thing like, you know, if you're a Leica shop or Sakura shop and you're using the slide holders, you know, you put them in the automatic stainer, cover slipper, and then depending on your system, you have to take the slides out of that and then load them into the scanner. One nice thing that Leica has is it uses the exact same cassette. So you can take that cassette right out of your cover slipper and plug it right into the scanner and off you go. So there's no extra handling that has to take place by the tech. And you know, we're looking at these hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of system and how to get pathologists to adopt. But think about the point of your question, how to get histotechs saying, hey, my life is easier because I'm using X, Y, or Z, you know? When you bring these systems into test, look at Tissue Finder, how much QC, how much rescan has to happen, because that's a tech that's redoing that piece. Meanwhile, the pathologist is just waiting to look at the stuff in their office, not knowing all this turmoil's going on in the background. So please support those folks. Well, that's it. thank you for your time today, and I hope you have a good AI day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to our panelists.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.